out of town. My mom and my sister across state lines. I appreciate that. All right, guys. We're on.
We are back live.
Oh.
All right. Anyone have a question for Chris Paris-Lamb, Chad Harbach, or Steve Kinella? Go ahead, Mike.
So I'm curious, for the 10 years or what, you know, however long you're writing the book, how many characters were sort of, if there are like, you know, five or six main characters, how many were fully formed in the game of the book, and how did they sort of change or evolve or emerge as you worked through the drafts?
Yeah, I mean, I think, the five of them were in place really pretty early on. You know, I started the book, like I said before, I kind of started the initial germ of the book was Henry's sort of crisis, so I really started the book with Henry and Schwartz and their kind of, you know, mentor-mentee relationship. Probably the one accidental and nice and fortuitous moment that came up early in the writing of the book was when Affenlight showed up, and that happened very early on. And then all of a sudden, I had Affenlight and Affenlight's daughter Pella and Owen. So I had that kind of cast of five from really an early moment. It's hard for me to say, because I think the book that. The end product is a lot like what I envisioned from the start, but I think it did take me a long time to sort of make those characters sort of as if, you know, if they're kind of interesting and complex now. I think it took me a long time to like sort of make them interesting and complex and to kind of work out because they all have relationships with one another, you know, and so that's this pretty complicated series of interactions, and, you know, so some of those were there from the start. Some of them took me a while to produce, and famously in the Vanity Fair article, my friend Keith Gessen was like, I read this book after Chad had been working on it for 5 years, and it seemed like a Disney movie. So I take that
with a major gay plot thread.
Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah. A lot of good Disney movies, you know. But I take that to mean that I made that the characters in the subsequent 5 years became more interesting and complex than they had been at that point. I hope.
Go ahead, Dan. Chad,
I'm really enjoying the book. About halfway through, and as I got to that point, it really struck me as the book. You could argue is a counterpoint, a direct counterpoint to The Natural, arguably the greatest baseball novel of American letters. And so much of the book, your book, is naturalistic. You know, that's a fable. This is so much grounded in contemporary culture. The one thing where there's the departure, though, is Aparicio, right? You talk a lot about famous baseball players. You name them. They're real. Aparicio is a fiction. So I was curious, did you have to kind of struggle in reconciling so much of the book is naturalistic, it's grounded in contemporary culture, all these famous baseball players, you create at a whole cloth this, you know, aphoristic, shaman-like figure. Did you struggle with that? I guess is my question.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't struggle with it, and it's possible that I could have struggled with it a little more. Aparicio came up very early in the writing of the book, I think it was only very, very late in the process that I named the book The Art of Fielding, and I think it wasn't until, and it was only when I made that maneuver that, you know, that Aparicio, you know, became a much sort of larger figure in the book, right? Because now you're sort of like drawing out those resonances in a way that like was, you know, not necessarily apparent before. So when I first started writing those aphorisms, and when I first like constructed that character with the somewhat bizarre name of Aparicio Rodriguez, it was a very, very minor little kind of sidelight in the book, you know, and And so I kind of, you know, and I just, you know, and I named him that just because I, like, love the word apparitio. Like, I just, like, I
was
just
thought. Was it connected to Luis Aparicio?
Well, I mean, of course. I mean, it's connected, but, like, you know, but Luis Aparicio is really, like, before my time. And so, like, I mean, I don't know that much about the guy. And so I really just, like, love the, I really just love the name. You know, and so I think even, like, even up until the point that the book came out, I did not understand how much people were going to, and in a nice and really gratifying way, like, people really like the book within the book, and people really like, I've been surprised by how many people, like, asked me about Aparicio Rodriguez. It hadn't, I don't think it had ever, like, struck me as such a kind of major feature of the book. So I didn't spend as much time thinking about that as I did about some other things.
Okay, John.
Yeah. I can tell you, I work at ESPN, and everybody there loves the reference to Aparicio. There are those of us who think it should have been Aparicio Carrascal, Aparicio Grove. But I want to know, for everybody here, a question is, what influences in your life did sports literature have? What are the works of sports literature that you read that became a part of your DNA in your writing process?
Sports edition.
Books.
You like DeLillo's sports novel, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, with Sports Illustrated, with ESPN, you do, and with the newspapers and everything, you read so much about sports just on a daily basis as a fan.
What sports books have you read?
Yeah, but
have resonated, made a different impact.
When I was young.
You're older too.
When I was young, it was probably it was. W.P. Kinsella made a big impact on me when I was a kid, and reading, you know, Shoeless Joe and Iowa Baseball Confederacy and those kind of books. You know, when I got a little bit older, I mean, I already talked about Infinite Jest, and I think that you know, Wallace's tennis writing, very important to me. You know, if there's one kind of you know, if there's any kind of, like, real particular antecedent to anything in the book, I think that Henry owes a lot to Wallace's essay about Michael Joyce, a sort of second level professional tennis player who Wallace, like, became totally entranced with and followed around for a long time, and tried to figure out Michael Joyce's, like, kind of incredible monastic sort of devotion to doing this thing at which he had then become the 100th best player. You know, he'd become the 100th best tennis player in the world, and this had required a sort of lifetime of, like, totally monastic devotion. And I think that really, that kind of triggered Henry in some ways for me. Yeah, and then one of my other favorite sports novels is Don DeLillo's End Zone, which I did a reading in Toronto last weekend, and somebody came up and gave me a copy of it. And I was like,
did you read any of the awesome early, like, Plimpton or Jenkins or Gallico or, you know, the more frivolous?
Yeah, what was the last one you said?
Paul Gallico.
I don't know him. I don't know him.
He was a forerunner of Plimpton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, certainly.
I'm too old to be.
Not true. Yeah, I mean, certainly the Plimpton books, and, like, you know, I mean, one of, like, I mean, I think, you know, John McPhee, like, sports books, like a sense of where you are, like his book about Bill Bradley.
That's a great title. What's the title?
Is that right? I think that's right.
A sense of where you are.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those. Yeah, and Plimpton and McPhee and those guys, like, just incredible sports writers.
All right, maybe we'll take another question or two. Connie, okay.
When you say the book is real, what specific or particular qualities or sensibilities are you talking about?
I'll repeat that question. She asked Steve, you say the book seems very real, what particular qualities are you referring to?
I think Chad did a great job of, you know, whether it's on the field or off the field or in the locker room or in their dorm rooms, Chad did a great job of capturing the way, you know, athletes talk to each other, I think. And you know, some of that is just capturing the way people talk to each other, which is one of the hardest things, I think, for any novelist to do. But capturing that sort of, that sort of back and forth, that banter, that locker room talk. It's not just talking smack back and forth. It's not just teasing each other. It's sort of the way we know this, the way brothers and sisters talk to each other in some ways, because a team is, it's a cliche, but a team is a family in a lot of different ways. And a lot of the exchanges between Henry and Schwartz, or Schwartz and the pitcher, now his name is
Starblind.
Their exchanges on the field that are sort of about the game, but they're sort of, there's always this underlying tension of, they have a lot of stuff going on off the field, but a lot of tension between each other, and they sort of carry that onto the field, and they can also, compartmentalize at the same time. I thought that the way Chad describes, baseball, the action on the field, the book opens with Henry, with Schwartz watching Henry field ground balls over and over. It's after a game, it's a brutally hot day, and Henry's practicing ad nauseum, as he always does. And, it's just one thing that it's kind of hard to describe. You know it when it's right, you also know it when it's wrong, and so many books get that wrong. People think it's easy to write about sports, it's easy to describe sports action, it's either easy to describe the way athletes talk to each other and the way athletes think, and that's not, I'm not an athlete, but I get to see some of these people in their natural habitat, and it's the way Chad describes them acting, thinking, behaving, talking is just felt completely right.
All right. Maybe one more question? Okay, two. Or, oh man, I don't know. Quick questions. How about three very quick questions? Okay.
I'd like to know what you did to make a living in that 10 years you said you were going to make the rest sometimes.
Oh man! Well, yeah. I was an assistant to a psychotherapist for a certain period. I went to graduate school for a little while. That was not very lucrative at all. I worked as a copy editor for a consulting firm. That went better, but then they laid me off. My roommate paid my rent for a while. A friend of mine started an internet startup company that then got sold to some Koreans, but then the Koreans got indicted, so we didn't make more than the dollars that we had to make. There are a couple more, but that'll do it.
That's for your memoir. All right, Christine.
I don't know if it's a quick question, but Steve talked a lot about these very elegant connections between the athlete's life and the writer's life and the same associated. You talked a lot about the painful process of writing the book and the length of time it took. And I'm wondering, was that on purpose, or was was that in your initial conception of the book, those connections between the writer's life and the athlete's life, or did it happen along the way, or did it happen by accident? How did that germ of an idea kind of become a bigger thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, if I understand what you're saying, I mean, I think it was probably a lot harder to be the writer. It was probably, for me, it was a lot harder to be a writer who was like 25, 26 years old and starting this book. And, because I started this book, I'd been out of college for like 4 years. The whole time I had just been working other weird jobs, like the weird jobs I just described, and like trying to write. And, and it wasn't going very well. So I think a lot of the kind of, a lot of the difficulty and the self-doubt and just the sort of agony of the whole process was like there from the very outset. So when I was finishing the book, and I wasn't in a great place in my life, but I kind of knew that I'd become a better writer. And so in certain ways it was like easier for me at that point. So I think a lot of what's in the book about the struggle of these sorts of things, like, it was a struggle from the very start, because I think, like, the hardest struggle for a writer is, like, when you're young and, like, you're just really unsure of what you're doing.
So just sort of was in that baked in?
Well, yeah, I mean, because when you're, I mean, because, if you're 25 or 26 and you've been doing this for a few years and you've been doing this, like, 4, 5, 6 hours a day for 5 years, that feels like a lot, and you feel like you've put a lot into this, and so... So I felt I probably felt like I was working harder and, being more sort of whatever, like tortured by the universe then than I did, you know, 7 or 8 years later. Yeah.
All right, and I guess this is the last question. My mom. Right?
Going back to the point about things you read that were influences, I mean, you're like, I was just wondering if you had seen that essay in the New Yorker maybe 7 or 8 years ago by Malcolm Gladwell about choking and panicking among athletes. Did you happen to see that? And if so, did it help you with the characterization?
You know, I was just, I just had a conversation with someone about this yesterday, but I have not read, but I, and I was like, I'm like, I was like, I had not read the piece. And so it wasn't very helpful to me.
That answers my question.
But I got to go.
For your next one.
I got to go look it up. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks again. And books are on sale by Mobile Libris and Fabulous. Thank you.